It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 376. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for any future topic or any tech question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and also send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And the wiki has been updated, linking all of the past shows, and that's the best place to go for getting all shows that I've recorded from one all the way up and including last week's show, and that is mtswiki.com. I got a jam-packed show tonight. I got lots of, I think, really interesting topics, and one of the topics on LDAP has been sparked by a listener question. I want to welcome all the new listeners who have discovered the show because of my hosting and being the leader of a new SIG in the Philadelphia Area Computer Society. It's the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG, and we meet the third Saturday of every month, and this past Saturday was the first meeting of that new special interest group, and I thought it was a really great success. I asked everybody to write down what topics they would like to hear about and talk about in upcoming meetings, and I got a tremendous response of incredible topics, and I do see that as a blend between my show that I do here and the SIG. There's lots of carryover and intertwining. I'm going to have someone take notes of all of the websites and everything that's being talked about, so it can go along with a blog post after the meeting on my main website. I also have a friend who's going to be attending every meeting. His name's John. He will work the camera for me and set up. Now, we didn't record last week, but I do intend to record all of the PAC SIGs that I host and put them up on YouTube. So even before the show, we were talking about how you can go about extending the limit to have unlimited videos and not be restricted to 15 minutes. So I will pursue that, so I can put the whole hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, and get that posted up. Looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I certainly will be talking about what topics as we get closer and closer. I already know the January meeting is going to be about virtualization, and I've already talked someone into coming in and giving that and helping me present that. The first thing I want to talk about is some Outlook questions and problems that I've ran into over the past 48 hours. I have a client that has asked me for the following, and I just didn't have an answer off the top of my head. He wants some kind of a form that he can call up in Outlook. He's using Outlook 2007, and he wants to be able to automatically, when he wants it, to have the BCC come out and be there with a particular person that's going to be BCC'd, but only when he wants it. And is there a way you can have that email form already set up? I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head. I thought of a wizard that would forward this person who's his secretary that email, the BCC, automatically as part of a wizard within Outlook. And he said no, because sometimes the emails are going to be personal in nature, or he doesn't want her to see that, so he doesn't want everyone. I started thinking about this as I started the show tonight, and there is a really good program that helps you automate the process of multiple Windows keystrokes. You can automate almost anything with the sending keystrokes and mouse clicks, and that's called Auto Hotkey. Maybe all he needs to do is set up Auto Hotkey that would automatically open a new message, enable the BCC to view, and put that person's name in. And then he's set with being able to do what he wants. So I'm thinking of Auto Hotkey as a possible answer. If anybody else has better suggestions or something that's more integrated into Outlook that can help us, that would be great, and I really appreciate that. The next problem is I set up a profile, new system, an Exchange server. I'm getting a weird error. Every time the user starts Outlook, they get a message that says the mailbox needs to be moved to, it's a temporary folder. Would you like to continue? Or if they don't click that, if they click the other button and they say no, they will be basically working offline. Now, a little background information. In order for them to see the shared contacts that come up in Outlook, and I've set this up before in Outlook 2007 with no, or you know what, it might be, I just thought about this, it might have been earlier versions of Outlook where I didn't get this error. And now that I'm thinking about it, it might be the first time I've done this in 2007. They have an account called Shared, and that Shared has 1,000 contacts in it. And in order for it to be available as a drop down in the Outlook address book when you are composing a new message and you want those contacts there, there's a procedure that you must follow where you create an Outlook profile, the first profile that brings up the shared email account. You go into contacts and then you tell it to be available in the address book and you rename contacts to be shared. You then exit out and you modify the profile and you now change the user's name. Instead of shared, it's now that person's name. So it's Jane Doe. When Jane Doe runs the profile and goes to compose a message, you now not only have the contacts for Jane Doe, you have the shared contacts available in the dropdown. It's the only way you can get this. And this goes back a few years with using Outlook, and we've never had this problem before. Now, with this particular person, Outlook's confused. And I can understand why it's confused, because remember, I originally set it up for a different user. I'm trying to use it with the actual user, but I initially set it up with the shared account. I hope I did not totally confuse everybody. And if you are an Exchange and Outlook person and you followed what I was doing and talking about and you understand this temporary mailbox move error, you know, you can click it and go right in and everything works properly. It's just an annoyance getting this error message every time you do it. I created a brand new profile. The first 4 or 5 times, we were able to get in with no trouble, and then now all of a sudden, the error's back. So after like the 6th, 7th time of running Outlook, they now get the error message every single time on a regular basis. That's the one issue that I'm working on that, again, it's an annoyance. It's not an emergency, but the client wants it solved, and they're a retainer client that I got to solve it. I wanted to share that. Quickly, I've got to talk about my dealings with Semantic. I have a client where they started getting a tremendous amount of spam all of a sudden last week. And as a matter of fact, it was last Thursday. They were getting crushed with spam Wednesday and Thursday. And I couldn't figure out why, because they have Semantic endpoint protection and the email security for Semantic. They got that whole suite on an Exchange server, which is Small Business Server 2008. I looked at the settings for the licensing info on the server, and I seen it expired, but it expired a month ago. So it took a whole month before anybody noticed that they were getting excessive amounts of spam, and I dropped the ball with the following. Even though I am not the primary contact for the licensing info for the client for Semantic, I knew that date, and I did not have that marked in my calendar as to when it would expire for that client to then notify me 30 or 60 days before it would expire. So we even had a fighting chance of maybe talking about another replacement or do we renew? And that's the lesson here as I start to talk about what happened and just trying to renew. Make sure that not only are you recording all the information for your clients and the technical info, but on expiration dates, you need to go into your whatever you use for your calendar, and you need to mark those dates in the future, like domain name registrations that need to come up for renewal. Anything that has a finite date on it, you want to put a warning 30 to 60 days in advance. And it's something I dropped the ball on for this particular renewal for this particular client. So client understood. She had no problem. She called Semantic, the support number that came with the just for the renewal, for the license. And they asked her, would you like to renew for multiple years? And gave her basically a deal that she could not refuse. So for 3 years, she figured we don't have to worry about this again. She re-upped for 3 years, gave the credit card info. Now we just need an activation key. And they said, no problem. It takes 3 to 5 days to get your final key, but we'll give you a temporary key right away and you'll have no problem. Now it's Friday morning and there's no email. My client calls Semantic and talking to 5 people over 4 hours, finally gets a temporary key and they send an email and it did not have the attachment. She called back again. They finally send one with an attachment. She forwards it to me. I try to load it on Friday and it said it's incompatible. The key's wrong. I let my client know, and she's just about had it with dealing with Semantic. And she says, I need you to just take this over and resolve this. I call, and it takes me 3 hours on the phone with Semantic, 3 different people, to finally get the right temporary key. Their licensing and their process is completely out of control. The people that are involved in the licensing of Semantic, they don't know what they're doing. And is it because of improper training? I think so. Not being familiar enough with the product line so they could generate the right keys? Definitely. And I have ran into this years ago with Semantic, with a totally different product. It was the same issues. We're not talking technical support here. We're not talking where, you know, the product's not working. We got an error message we got to solve. We're just talking, we're handing them money and we're trying to renew. This should be the simplest process in the world. They take the money. It's this product. Here's the key. Send the key. it should be painless, but it caused significant pain and suffering. It continues. We're a week later now, and we finally get the right key. I get the key after I start threatening that my client is demanding now a complete 100% refund on the purchase that she made for the 3 years, and I'm now in the process of downloading the Trend Micro Suite for the 30-day eval so I can install that on the server, and we're going to rip out Symantec, never that it darkens the doorstep of my client ever again. This is the conversation I'm having. And it was funny. There was someone behind me who was actually doing my bookkeeping for the company and entering everything into QuickBooks. And he was laughing as I said the following. I was getting upset and I did not raise my voice. And I said, we need to escalate this. Oh, no, sir, I'm going to help you. I said, no. I'm getting very angry. It's going to be very ugly in a couple minutes. I can't take it anymore. You're unable to help me. Please escalate this call. Now, remember, they're going to do everything they can not to escalate it. And I said, just for your own sanity, just to save yourself, please connect me to a supervisor, anybody, a manager, somebody that is above you. You need to do this to save yourself. And I finally got through that it was getting ugly. It was going to get ugly and I was going to lose it. They got me some. They really did. They got me somebody. And the person said, I am going to solve this. And it seems like what they were doing, they were entering the wrong product information that generated the wrong keys. Because I've now tried four different keys and nothing's working. And I don't get it. I'm giving them the versions. I'm giving them the product number. But somebody somewhere, they keep mistyping it. Where I finally get someone in a power position that knows what they're doing, that knows the product I'm trying to renew, and they get me a temporary key. And he says, you will get the final key in 3 to 5 days. No problem. So my client, literally, yesterday, they sent a key. Guess what? It wasn't for 3 years. It was for 1 year. So I didn't apply it because we clearly seen what came with it and the paperwork that came with it in the attachment, and it said it was for 1 year. She calls back and again starts dealing with them. They send another email and guess what? No attachment. And they said, the key's attached. It's not attached. She spends hours again on the phone. And then they say, well, now you have to go to a portal. We don't have a portal login. So we got to create a portal login and we go there. We can't get the key from the portal. So it's just a nightmare. And these are the things that now I take with me when it comes time for the following conversation. I have a client that the renewal for the Trend Micro Suite for their antivirus and their anti-spam is coming up for renewal. And they've asked me for my recommendation. And I said, you don't want the pain and suffering that I'm currently going through right now with Symantec. So this impacts purchases for clients. And look, I'm now talking about it, sharing this story with you. If you go back, mention this to someone in your company, why would you want to go through the pain and suffering that I'm sharing? That's what I share this with you so you can avoid it and spread the word that to avoid Symantec from a licensing standpoint. Now, remember, we haven't even talked about anything technical yet. We're just talking about licensing. It's a mess. Sometimes it's worth doing other things, choosing something else, because of the frustration that you're going to go through, or now it's the frustration you can avoid because of what I'm discussing with you. A cool site that came up in the PAX meeting last week that my oldest son was with me, Michael Jr., someone mentioned One of the biggest problems of moving from an ISP and changing your ISP is changing your email. Now, my advice is never use your ISP's email, because if you're ever going to change, you got a major problem. You don't want to be locked in to Comcast or Verizon. You want something more generic like Gmail, Hotmail. I'd stop at Gmail. So you really should have a Gmail email account. How about the following site that can manage the process that you can switch between any email account from Comcast to Verizon, from Gmail to Comcast, Comcast to Gmail? And how about a website that will walk you through, and if you are, and it's, if you are actually switching to Comcast, Verizon, or Gmail, one of their partners, AOL, Hotmail, and they have a couple others listed, it's a free service that they will notify everybody in your address book, maintain forwarding your mail to the new address, copy all of your personal data over. My son has used it, and they recommend this to clients and customers of Comcast. They send them to TrueSwitch.com, and the service is a paid service if you're not using one of their partners that are listed on the front page. It's just $19.95. But if you're using one of the partners where you want to move from Verizon or Comcast, what a great idea. Or if it's not for you, if you run into someone, maybe it's a parent or a brother, sister, friend, somebody that they are tied to an ISP's email and they need to systematically and properly move to another email address, and you have software and a site that will guide you through that process. So that's why I'm mentioning this, because there's so many people that don't realize that until they go to make that switch. And it's going to happen when you find out you want to lower that cable bill and you're now Fios maybe is in your area, you're already a Comcast user, and you want to leverage the competition to lower the price, and maybe you got to make that switch. And if you do, what's going to happen to your email? I learned a valuable lesson when I was with Comcast for 15 years, and I thought, well, I'd never need anything other than Comcast, my email. Well, what happens when I got Fios? I moved, and I moved into an area where Fios was available, and I was now presented with, oh my gosh. So I personally sent, you know, mass emails letting everybody that I could think of know that my address is changing. But more than that, it's where do you have that email embedded? All of those stores and online shopping and different accounts. It was a major chore to switch. So I know what it takes and all of the hassles of changing emails. And a lot of people will decide it's just not worth it. But sometimes you're going to be forced into it, because Comcast only keeps your email for X amount of time, where after you no longer have the account, and that's it. And then it's gone. Something that we can recommend to people, it's a great site and software and process that we can help with migration of an email account from one email address to another. Hopefully that will help you out if you're in that situation. I have an email for the final topic that's going to take a few minutes here to discuss, and it's from Lonnie. And he says, do you know anything about LDAP? LDAP? I don't. And I need to learn about it. But everything that I have found on the internet starts out at too high of a level for me. I am using XP, and most of the tutorials are Linux-oriented. I have a fax machine that stores only 100 addresses, and we are in need of a lot more than that. The fax is capable of looking at an LDAP server, but this is where I am stuck. I have no database background, no server background, and zero LDAP experience. If you could just point me in a direction of someone that I could email back and forth, and at a very basic starter or tutorial for LDAP, I would appreciate it so much. And this is from Lonnie. And Lonnie, it's been a few days. I have to email Lonnie back. I can be that person. But here's what we're going to start out. The first question I have for Lonnie is, if you have that many people on a fax machine, how big is your office environment? What do you have, or what are you using for authentication to log in? Do you have a server? Do you have a domain? Is the domain Active Directory? Because if it is, that's a database, and there's your LDAP that you can populate and then query it as needed. Just a simple Windows server, Active Directory server, gets you your LDAP. You may have the answer already in your office. You just might need to talk to the right IT person in the office. And I'm assuming that your company's big enough that you may or may not have the server. And if you don't, it's inexpensive to set up. And I could walk you through that. But let's get a basic understanding of what LDAP is. To get started with LDAP, you first need to know what a directory is. And a directory is a specialized list that lets you quickly look up information about the things the directory references. For example, a telephone directory is an alphabetic list of people and organizations with phone numbers and often addresses too. A corporate directory is a database of people, network resources, organizations, and so forth. The corporate database probably holds not just phone numbers, but also other information like email addresses, employee and department numbers, and application configuration data. The corporate directory is managed by a directory server, which takes requests from a client application and serves them back directory data from the database. So you need to make a query and get the information back. Now, I've worked in environments where we've locked that process to a specific password and login, so you're not allowed to query the LDAP directory unless you know and have an approved account. Maybe it's a authenticated user, or maybe it's a specialized account with a password that you've shared for people or devices to make that query to the database. So you want to protect it and lock it down in a way that it's not open to the world, or you can make it open. So anybody can make that query and say, what's the email address for Jane Doe? And you'd be able to type Jane, let it query and come back. A lot of multifunction printers have LDAP capability that they can query a directory, which is what I think Lonnie's looking for here. He has this fax machine, and in order to pull information, the fax machine says, okay, what's your LDAP server? Well, it wants an IP address, and it's going to communicate at a certain port, and it wants to be able to go to this directory, this master database, to pull information so you can send the next fax. LDAP, it stands for Lightweight Directory Access Protocol, and it provides a standard language that directory client applications and directory servers use to communicate with one another about data in directories. LDAP applications can search, add, delete, and modify directory data. LDAP is a lightweight version of the earlier DAP, D-A-P, Directory Access Protocol, and it was used by the International Organization for Standardization, the X.500 standard. DAP gives any application access to the directory through an extensive and robust information framework, but at a high administrative cost. DAP does not use the internet standard, which is TCP/IP protocol. and has complicated directory naming conventions and generally requires a big investment. LDAP preserves most of the features of DAP at a lower cost. LDAP uses an open directory access protocol running over TCP/IP and uses simplified encoding methods. LDAP retains the X.500 standard data model and could support millions of entries for a comparatively modest investment in hardware and network infrastructure. I am going to have links to all of this that I'm discussing about LDAP and more in the show notes. LDAP directories differ from relational databases. In LDAP, you do not look data up in tables. Instead, you look data up in trees, similar to the tree you get if you diagram the contents of a file system. So think of that as a tree, and think of the tree holding all this information. The data is not in rows and columns, but in what are called entries. And these entries are much like the entries in a phone book. An LDAP entry is composed of attributes and their values. Now, a common LDAP for a Active Directory Windows server environment is all of the information that your IT department and administrators enter. The name, address, phone number, there are a ton of fields. If you have Exchange for your email, you now have all of the email properties, and you also have hierarchies of who people report to. Think of the massive amount of fields and data that is available when you are creating an account in Windows Server 2003 or Windows Server 2008. This LDAP, when you hear it, is the way that you can query and get that information. That's all it is. And I hope I simplified the explanation of what LDAP is. Where it's going to get complicated is when you got to build an LDAP environment from scratch and you got to build that directory. It's like, okay, here I am. Now, how do I get all that information? And is all that information available to you to enter? So you want to look at information stores that may already be within your company and then take that and see if you can make it LDAP aware if it's not already, or maybe it's just learning how to query it. Maybe it's making sure that those ports are open that LDAP uses so you can make that query into the server and get that information. You may have to allow the device that's querying it permission. And so there could be account information that you have to enter. So I know on multifunction machines that I rolled out in a corporate environment with the domain controller and the LDAP services, what we would do is we would enter the name and password to make that query. We would put the IP address of the main domain controller, which was the LDAP server or the Active Directory server. And then you could walk up to a multifunction machine, start typing someone's name, their email address would be right there. So you would be able to scan a document and it would email to the person, and we didn't have to enter any of that information at the multifunction machine because it was querying a database that already had all that information. And as we described, the database is a tree structure that is laid out and available for you to query. I would not get, there's probably a lot of Linux people out there that would say, you know, it's pretty easy to set up. I think it's easier to administrate a basic Windows network. And if you set up a domain controller, Active Directory controller, and just by entering all that information for all the users that are going to be on the network, you now have created that master database. And Lonnie, I hope I answered your question. I know I answered a portion of it, which gave you the history and a little bit information of LDAP, but I'm going to need specifics about your individual network, what's running on it, and let's take advantage of some things that are there, because we might be able to. If you are purchasing anything from Amazon, make sure to use my links to make your purchase. Anybody that you know, send them amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon. Either of those sites will take you directly to Amazon, and you can purchase anything you want, and I'll get a commission, and that's what helps support the show. And thank you so much for everybody that is using that and your continued use. I really appreciate it. In honor of a group that I really enjoy their music and have for years and years, the group this week, REM, announced their retirement and that they are going to be no longer recording and they're breaking up. And I dug deep into my library to find the following song by REM. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Dream, 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 dream. Charms whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream, 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 dream when I feel blue in the night and I want you to hold me tight.
Was REM and the song Dream. And I will have a link where you can purchase it. I want to thank everybody for downloading, staying subscribed, listening to the show. Quick announcement. Next week, there will be no Mike Tech Show. Now, this week, there was no Tech Vets. Next week, there will be a Tech Vets. Wednesday night, I'll record that live at 8 p.m. Eastern time, but there'll be no Mike Tech Show next week. That's it. I'll see you the following week. Same time, same channel. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.